Welcome to special Rhode Island Public Radio coverage of Rhode Island being poised to move ahead with same-sex marriage. I'm Rhode Island Public Radio political reporter Ian Donis. We'll talk with key supporters and opponents and get a national perspective that puts the latest local developments in a broader context. Finally, we'll also have a panel discussion with our usual crew from the weekly political roundtable. Just last night, the Rhode Island Senate voted 26-12 on legislation to legalize same-sex marriage. In what is largely a procedural matter, the House of Representatives is expected to pass the legislation next week, and Governor Lincoln Chafee has pledged to sign it. When that happens, Rhode Island will join the other New England states that have already legalized same-sex marriage. It will also end a battle that began when Rhode Island's first same-sex marriage bill was introduced almost 20 years ago in 1997. Joining me in the studio are Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Great to be here.
And Ray Sullivan, head of the group that led the fight for same-sex marriage, Rhode Islanders United for Marriage. Hello, Ray.
Hello, Ian. Thanks for being here.
We're also joined by an opponent of same-sex marriage, the Reverend Todd Strickland, pastor of the Narragansett Bay Baptist Church in Warwick. Thank you for joining us, Todd.
Thank you for the invitation.
Todd, let's start with you. As we know, advocates have been trying to pass same-sex marriage legislation in Rhode Island for many, many years with no real effect. Why do you think it was different this time around?
Well, I think clearly from my involvement and presence on the Hill during the debates that the emotional nature of the testimony that was offered from the opposing side was very compelling. Those of us that sat there and watched, even from a perspective of opposition, could not help but be moved by the emotional nature of the stories that were shared. I think on a very practical level, I am not a political operative, obviously, but reading the commentary that's been given, observing the results and why this took place, it seemed very apparent that the change of mind, of heart of two of the Republican one Republican and one Democrat that sat on the Senate Judiciary Committee unexpectedly making their turn was the sealing of the fate. So
let's go to Ray Sullivan here. Ray, you led a very organized grassroots campaign to try and pass same-sex marriage legislation. We also know that public attitudes have shifted a lot on the issue just in the last 2 years. Why do you think it was different this year than in years past?
Sure. I just want to back up and correct one thing that the Reverend just said. The Republican on the Judiciary Committee is Senator Dawson Hodgson, and he is he's been a longtime supporter of marriage, and so he has been strong in his commitment to that for nearly the last 2 years. But as to the other points that have been made, look, this was one of the largest grassroots campaigns that the state has ever seen. Tens of thousands of Rhode Islanders knocked on doors, made phone calls, and contacted their legislators at an unprecedented level. We've seen time and time again people go up to the State House year after year and just simply ask that their families, their relationships, and their love be recognized, respected, and treated equally under the law. And after nearly two decades of waging that fight, finally, the state Senate has acquiesced and has agreed to allow all loving and committed couples to have the freedom to marry.
Let's go to Scott here.
Reverend Strickland, just a quick question. Other states in New England have all ratified same-sex marriage. What has happened in those other states that's so bad? Most people travel to Seekonk or to Hartford or to Burlington, Vermont, or they go skiing in New Hampshire, and they don't see that the church doors have been closed, that anybody's rights have been infringed upon.
One of the things that could be answered to that, and certainly not within the short few minutes that we would have together, but there has been a preparation of a document from Mass Resistance specifically dealing with what has been the fallout from our perspective in the state of Massachusetts. And while I would grant you that going to visit a city, even enjoying the atmosphere that may be there, the undercurrents that have affected various aspects of life for those that would oppose these things has been very, very clear. I think one of the things that concerns us most at this point, even with where this will go in the state of Rhode Island, has to do with public education, what will inevitably be discussed here with the religious liberties, responsibilities, and so forth and so on. So there has been fallout in other states. While it may not be upfront and public, those things have existed and have been well publicized.
Do you have a follow-up, Scott, for Ray Sullivan?
I'm just wondering, Ray, what's your next move here? So far, it appears that you folks have been pretty good about not doing the fist pumping, the triumphalism. I know that there was obviously a spontaneous outburst from people when it is. What do you see now as the role of your group in trying to educate folks on the other side and respect their views?
Well, first thing, I want to go back to something that the Reverend touched on about local school boards. Decisions about curriculum and public education are made by Rhode Island school committees. Nothing in 5015 or Senate 38 would impact a school committee's ability to dictate its own curriculum.
Now, when you speak of those bills,
districts.
Ray, they're the bills.
Those are the bills that overwhelmingly passed both chambers. We see our role at this point as continuing to be a broader advocacy voice for the LGBT community. There will be questions about implementation, questions about what happens to folks who are in existing civil unions, how they will be recognized. And so we'll continue to be a public education tool for that as this goes forward.
I'd like to put the question to Todd Strickland. What is the next move here for people like yourself who are opposed to same-sex marriage? It seems like it's a fait accompli in terms of the legislation, and the governor has indicated he'll sign it. But what about people like yourself who are personally opposed to it, the movement of people who are opposed to it? What is the next step?
Well, I think from the aspect of the organization, part of this that has been so active on the Hill trying to stand against the decision that has been made, there will also be a nature of education process that will go on where the, first of all, the education about exactly what has taken place to the voters, and then again, what the dangers are that lie ahead and how we begin to build up a plan of dealing with those things as they occur. I'd also, I guess, want to take just a step back as well with regard to the idea that there's been a huge public shift in this discussion. The fact is the numbers are still where nearly 80% of Rhode Islanders wanted the opportunity to be able to voice their opinion. And so when you asked me a moment ago about why this went the way it did, and we can politically come down to that, there are basically two votes that made the difference. Their change of vote made a difference. I don't think that you could call that a huge public shift. So I think as we move ahead, there will be the responsibility for, and on this side of it, with the continuing education, even as Ray has mentioned, with his perspective and their view and their people. And from my world that I live in with the church, where we go with that will be continually determined by where this goes, where it leads.
Reverend, do you think you have a recourse in court?
I'd have to leave that question to those that have an ability to be able to respond.
Reverend, I believe you were referring to the vote in the Senate Judiciary Committee on Tuesday when there was a 6-5 vote against putting the same-sex issue to a statewide vote. The number two guy in the Senate, Dominic Ruggiero, came down on the side of putting it to the statewide vote, but his side wound up losing 5-6. Ray Sullivan, we know that advocates on your side argued that same-sex marriage is a civil right and that rights affecting a minority should not be a matter of a public vote. Why don't you elaborate on that? Why do you think that there should not, why do you think that it was not the right way to go to allow the people of Rhode Island to decide this issue?
Sure. Well, despite the fact that an overwhelming majority of Rhode Islanders support granting equal rights to gay and lesbian couples, we have always maintained the position that matters of human dignity, individual human rights, should not be left to a public vote of the majority. We've seen time and time and again in states where there have been public referendum campaigns, very caustic and expensive efforts to demonize same-sex families. When those campaigns are waged, real people, real families are hurt. And so despite the fact that an overwhelming majority of Rhode Islanders, I want to make sure that folks know that every public opinion poll that's been published in the last 2 years has said Rhode Islanders overwhelmingly support marriage equality. We do not believe that matters of human dignity and individual rights should be subjected to a public referendum.
I'd just like to remind our listeners, you're listening to a special political roundtable looking at same-sex marriage in Rhode Island. Let's go back to Todd Strickland here. What about this argument from people on the other side of the issue that they consider same-sex marriage a civil right, and that just as we would not want to have a public vote on whether religious minorities or ethnic minorities could vote, that it's not appropriate to put an issue like this to a statewide vote?
Again, there are a number of these things from a legal aspect that would have to be handled by those that come at it from a legal mind. I would say that my own argument, which leads into the entire church side of this, every law that is ever enacted is a law that deals with the restraint of a behavior. A statement made to say that one thing is wrong and another thing is right, where in this particular issue it has been declared that that is not the right action to take. In the declaration, they're having to look at the other side and say that we are wrong for holding a position of some kind of absolute truth. From the church perspective, this is far beyond a legal matter. It has to do with that issue of truth. Is there such a thing as an absolute that can be determined? And what is then the way that a society ought to deal with that absolute truth?
This is a question for both of you gentlemen. First, Reverend, if you wanted a referendum, fine, but why do you think in the last election cycle the four states, Minnesota, Washington, Maryland, and Maine, that had referendum, the gay rights side won all of those states, and some of those are more conservative states than Rhode Island, with more evangelical church members. And I'm just wondering, it seems even nowadays when you do the small d democracy and put this to a vote, people are willing to grant same-sex couples legal status.
Well, I would also say that up until this last election, that had not been the case. So there clearly has been a move. I would say that move has been the incredible effort that has been put forth by the other side. And the mechanism, the job that they did in getting their support out, and I, again, very clearly demonstrated by what took place here in our own capital. I clearly acknowledge that the effort that was done was incredibly effective. But as I said to my own church congregation last night, the fact that you continue to see movements or change, or even within the homosexual community, the numbers of coming out, so to speak, anytime something is finally empowered, there's some kind of endorsement of something where something's being held out, obviously people's minds begin to wander. And I would say to you that is, in my opinion, a glaring fault on the part of those that sit in my role to have properly educated their own constituency. And I'm talking about people that are sitting in the pew.
Ray Sullivan, we've seen how some people in the religious community, like Todd Strickland, are opposed to same-sex marriage. Senator Harold Metz, a very religious man, gave one of the most longest and detailed speeches in the state Senate yesterday against same-sex marriage. And at the same time, there have been many members of the religious community who are part of your coalition that advocated for same-sex marriage. What do you say to those people in the religious community who hold their faith very closely, who are concerned that same-sex marriage will infringe on their rights and their faith?
Well, first, I want to tell you that I'm really proud of the large and broad coalition of faith leaders, more than 150 clergy representing 13 different denominations and faith traditions that have stepped up and spoken out for the freedom to marry. For those faith traditions or churches that don't support equal rights for same-sex couples, nothing changes. The legislation that was overwhelmingly supported by the House and the Senate in no way mandates that they sanctify or even condone a same-sex marriage. But what it does do is it removes a significant roadblock and impediment of pastoral care to those faith traditions that want to minister to same-sex couples.
Todd Strickland, would you like to respond?
Well, I would only say to that, that about the issue of nothing changes. I sat several weeks ago and saw Senator Nestlebush almost reticent with the idea that there had been these ongoing arguments about the religious liberty section, that was saddened in expressing it, that these had been necessary, disagreeing with them, and then lauded them when this announcement was made the other day. I sat again in the most recent Senate hearings prior to yesterday and heard Senator Hodgson and Senator Archambault almost with a little bit of chuckling that anybody could be suggesting that there would be no endangerment on the religious liberty side of this issue. And all I would hope is that when this begins, as it has in the other places where this has been enacted, that both Ray and the senators that believe that this hasn't happened and insisted that they would never obviously support such a thing will be there rallying for those that have disagreed.
Reverend, where in the Gospels of the New Testament and in the life of Christ do you find this kind of interpretation that says that same-sex coupling is wrong?
When Jesus was asked about the nature of marriage, and in particular the question that he was asked about had to do with the permanency of the nature of marriage, he bypassed all of the Old Testament law and went directly back to the original design for marriage that was laid out in Genesis chapter 3. So, in doing so, dealt with man and woman. When you move beyond that to the doctrine laid out for the church by the Apostle Paul, it just could not be any clearer. I've many times stated that those that find themselves in a liberal position doctrinally may argue this point. I may have to explain a passage. They have to explain it away. And again, just within recent days, as we have begun to try to determine how do we have this discussion, and what I hope can be a very civil discussion on these issues, that the description that the Bible gives of the behavior itself is biblically unacceptable.
Do you think, Reverend, that being gay is an inherited kind of trait, like being left-handed or right-handed, or do you believe it's a conscious choice of a human being?
If you're asking me for a simple answer, I believe that it's a conscious choice, and I think that if you read the scripture with regard to what even Paul had to say about natural versus unnatural, and without trying to stigmatize that reference, just understanding what does it mean for something to be in its natural condition and something a choice being made to be unnatural, I don't think you could argue that point.
Ray Sullivan, would you like to respond?
Sure. Well, with regards to some of the things that the pastor discussed, first I want to be clear that House Bill 5015 and Senate Bill 38, the marriage equality legislation, deals with civil marriage. As I said before, nothing will change for those congregations, faith traditions, that don't want to sanctify or recognize same-sex couples. The pastor will not be required to marry a same-sex couple should that couple seek to do so in his congregation. In the same way that a Roman Catholic priest can decide not to marry a person of the Lutheran tradition. And secondly, for us, from a faith perspective, this is fundamentally about the golden rule and recognizing that all of us as Rhode Islanders, as citizens, as neighbors, deserve to be recognized and treated equally under the law. That's what these bills are about.
Ray, we're almost out of time in this segment, but I'd like to ask you quickly. You've been around politics here for a long time. You're a former state representative. You've worked on campaigns. What do you think it says that it takes so long to get something done in Rhode Island like same-sex marriage, where there were a lot of people advocating for it?
I was born here. I've grown up here. I've worked here for my entire adult life. And when this passed, I was really proud to be a Rhode Islander. I know it took far too many years to get to this point, and I think about all the people that worked so hard to get us here. But it was an important movement forward for the state.
All right. We would like to thank our guests in this segment, Ray Sullivan, the head of Rhode Islanders United for Marriage. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ian.
And the Reverend Todd Strickland, the pastor of Narragansett Bay Baptist Church in Warwick. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll be joined by Brown University political science professor Wendy Schiller to help give us a national perspective on the changing politics of same-sex marriage.